Welcoming you to the LL Research Radio Program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, February 11th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted to let us know that you want to ask a question. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LL Research. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A, and try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. How is everybody on this wintry afternoon?
Chipper.
We're doing just fine.
Doing great.
I'd like to mention, just in building up to things, that there are two gatherings that are going to take place soon, and we want to make sure everybody knows about them. One is a gathering with healing intuitive. It's just an absolutely wonderful weekend of searching out your own healing balances, and I just commend this healer enough. She's wonderful, and she has helped me tremendously. I think that she will help each and every person who comes to, and we'll be so glad that you did. That will be held here in Louisville, and what's the date on that, guys? Austin?
The Art of Healing Soka Retreat is from March 21st to the 23rd, and that is at the Courtyard Louisville East Hotel. You can find more information about that on our bringforth.org website. Under the Bring Forth News section, you'll find a link to it.
Okay, excellent. And then the other one is for those of you who have puzzled over the archetypes, Ezra discussed them in Volume 4 of The Law of One. There will be an open discussion and some guided thoughts from Sephira Vox. This will be held in April on a wonderful farm locale with motels nearby. Nobody has to tent unless he wants to, and Gary is absolutely ecstatic because there will be a bonfire and as we go around the circle the first night, that will be talking around the bonfire, and that should be a very uplifting and spiritually opening kind of a atmosphere. And I think that conversation is going to be a very interesting one. So what are the dates on that one, Austin?
The Archetypes Workshop is April 11th through the 13th, and it's Perryville, Kentucky.
So these two gatherings from LNL we just recommend with our whole heart and hope that we will see you there.
Indeed. Thank you, Carla. Today's selection from the transcript library comes from November 27th, 2010. Quo says, "It is improbable, if not impossible, that a simplistic concept shall prove to be the reliable answer when it comes to the connection between mind and body, or emotions and body. We do not discourage you from making, for instance, the assumption that because the portion of the body that is affected is in the orange ray chakra area, that there is something to do with relationships within the mind and the emotions that is affecting the body. What we do wish to do is encourage you to lift up from literal connections and take upon yourself, in thinking about this relationship betwixt emotions and mind and the physical body, the kind of attitude a storyteller has. When a storyteller is telling a story, there is a part of it, perhaps the backbone of it, that is literally so. But there are other elements in the story that create of it a tall tale or a yarn, as the saying goes, a tale that has been embroidered to emphasize certain aspects. It is helpful to tell yourself the story of the illness that you seem to be experiencing. It is helpful to relax the mind. Imagine the self sitting at the campfire and telling the story of this to someone else in such a way that it catches some of the mystery that is between the lines of mind and body. For that which is inner to you is not simply a mind. It is not simply that which can compute, as this instrument would say when speaking of computers. It is not a tool only for intelligent thought, logical ratiocination, and the use of logic. It is also a mind that has tremendous access to intuition and insight, to poetry, to the melody of your life, not simply the words, but the song of it."
Thank you, Gary. When this one was channeled, the questioner was a person who had a problem in the orange ray area, or so he thought. And he was fairly sure that there was a literal link between part of the body that was ailing him and the chakra that was involved, which was the orange ray. And the orange ray has to do with relationships, either with the self or with other people, other selves. And he was going round and round and round and round, driving himself crazy, trying to find some way that he was failing to be in a good relationship with himself or with anybody else. And he simply couldn't make any sense of it. And so this was the atmosphere in which the question was asked. And it was a question that has enough to do with me as a channel that the Kuo principle was sort of tiptoeing around the edges of answering, because I have been ill for some time, and I have been ill for all my life with one thing and another, and have been flat on my back for the last little while. So, you know, what gives? You know, what is it? Where have I failed? What in the red ray do I have I lost my joy of living? Have I somehow denied myself the joys of sex, knowing me and my notoriously round heels when I was a younger woman and free of responsibility, that would be a no, a big no. I have always been a woman of passion who embraced sex wholeheartedly and found great joy in it. I've found great joy in every aspect of my life. So obviously the literal discussion of illness and the relationship between mind and body is not helpful for me. And add to that Ra's absolute statement a couple of times that I had made the decision to have a frail body throughout my incarnation and not be well, but always to be dealing with illness. That leaves one with the question, well, why would a person choose to do that? And obviously, you have to fall back on mythology and stories and lore to find out why a person would choose to be less than totally healthy, less than totally strong physically, with the many challenges that are to be dealt with. One thing that has occurred to me many times is that I share with wanderers everywhere a good deal of difficulty in dealing with the vibrations here. This is a difficult place to be if you are used to being in a place where everybody, literally everybody, loves everybody else with a devotion and a cherishing that is complete. And the greatest joy that anybody feels in that density from which we may have come is to be in each other's presence. So that in one reading it is discovered that the reason for eating in fifth density is not because the body needs food. The body has no need for food whatsoever, and the food is a kind of broth, like we would not call it ambrosia because that is a fruit dish, but it is called ambrosia, the food of the gods. And it's a very light, golden white broth. And the only reason for having it is the joy of gathering together and being together and sharing in that very basic. Suddenly, no matter how much we knew before we came into this incarnation that it was going to be different, that it was going to be harsh compared to where we came from, it was going to be a challenge, and we had to remember why we did this or it wouldn't make any sense at all. Regardless of all that, we're plunged into this incarnation beyond the veil of forgetting, as the rock calls it. We can't remember why we came here. We don't remember that we're wanderers. We don't remember that we came here for any particular reason, that we had a mission, that we wanted to be of service, that we wanted to hold space for the light to flow through us and lift the consciousness of our planet at a very critical time for it. It's very difficult to remember these things when it seems nothing but a, sometimes, nothing but a, just a, I don't even know how to say it, a place of degradation and a place where people don't value each other. And it's all very confusing. Why don't people value each other? Why don't people want to get along? Why don't people sit down and talk things out instead of going to war again and again? It's a problem of a difference in vibration, difference in the wiring. We're not wired for this particular incarnation properly. We're halfway wired from the planet from which we came, or from the density from which we came. So is this vibration, the planetary vibration, is hard on our bodies, and a lot of wanderers are ill one way or another. whether it's something simple like allergies to something that's much, much more complex, like the problems that this entity Y was facing, or that I face, or that so many of the people that we all know face. I think it's because of being a wanderer and because of the difficulty in dealing with the vibratory level of fear. And it's hard to remember that we came here specifically because these vibrations were having a lot of trouble and needed our help. And how can we help? Well, we can help. Sure, we can help by doing things. And you see so many examples of wonderful people serving in various capacities that really help and lift the planet in various ways. But all of us can help by being that person that can hold the light, that can hold that space within ourselves, that space of unconditional love, an open heart that is resting in joy and resting in an assurance that all is well and that it's time for us to work. But that is okay. That's why we came here. So we simply just get on with it, not worry about anything except holding that light, allowing ourselves to remain in the open heart. Could we do this all the time? I think all of us would probably find it easier and easier to have a degree of wellness that we do not experience at this time. However, I don't know anyone who swears, yes, I am able to do this all the time. Actually, I do know one person. He is no longer with us, and his name is Don Elkins. And it's very possible that he did, for the very large part of his life, he was able to maintain an open-heartedness that was complete. But for the rest of us, things throw us, you know. I mean, anything from somebody cutting us off in traffic and threatening not only their lives but ours to things that we see as the first question that we have today talks about, things that we see in the world that are less than pleasant. And what is our response to that, you know? How can we help? And we don't remember that the main way we can help is simply by keeping our hearts open and doing everything we can to do just that. And that is a state of being. It's not a state of doing. And there's nothing outer to it. You can't see it. You can usually feel it. You can usually feel a person with an open heart. You like to be with that person. It's a good thing to be with that person. But you may not be able to see it at all. That person may be very humble in this life and not have any outer work that could be told about on the news. The person simply might be a good mom or a good dad, a good friend, you know, a good mate, a good lover. And all of these things are so important. But they don't show. And that's okay. It doesn't matter what other people think. Never let anybody tell you that being sick is your own fault. Don't go there. Rest back in the joy of life, knowing that we are all illusions, that our life is made up of thoughts, that we are vibrations. And it's so important simply to get to know our own vibration, and then little by little to balance that which is out of kilter. Be a storyteller to yourself. Be one that casts blame. Remember that you are a part of the Creator. And when you forgive, you have done it all. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Carla. Our first question today comes from Storm Shadow, submitted via Bring Forth, and it's a doozy of a question, and I have a feeling we may spend most, if not all, of this show chewing it over. Storm Shadow writes, I recently read a disturbing article about some very dark issues around people kidnapping children and selling them for sex. When reading articles like this, my lightworker positivity seems to slip right off, and I go into full-on planet-eating mode. I try to rationalize it, taking what I've learned about karma from Casey and Ra into account, and I remember that the people involved in these crimes were likely previously bankers and politicians, and such that worked to create the economic conditions which they have now been born into to, quote, enjoy. But a part of me still recoils in horror that men like this are allowed to draw air on the same planet that good men live on. How do you guys, with your intimate experience with the Law of One, deal with this kind of knowledge? Is it morally okay to say to yourselves, quote, not our karma, somebody else's, let them work it out because it's too big for any of us to make a dent in, even if we tried, end quote? Or do you feel like you should be doing something beyond making your part of the earth a little better and radiating love and light? And do you feel a little guilty for being born into an existence where this sort of thing is a non-concern? I'm having difficulty shedding that guilt myself. Well, Storm Shadow, thank you for what is a very challenging question. In the face of egregious harm inflicted upon others, it's a good question to ask. Is silence tantamount to acquiescence? Is failure to take outward action against these sort of crimes equivalent to tacit support? I don't really have a definitive answer there. It's a question that we touched on last week, too, when we discussed Martin Luther King's thought on the matter. to begin with, I don't think that anyone should fight their reaction, feel rage and horror, if that's your response, because it is horrible and barbarous by all relative measures. Feel empathy and pain, because situations like you mentioned are painful for the victim of the act, painful for those connected to the victim, and painful even for the perpetrator, perhaps. But being a spiritual seeker, something inside of you knows that there is a higher vision and a higher response, and that is where your work is, and my work and our work, or the work of all positively polarized beings. I won't myself attempt to examine the reasons for these sorts of incidents. I'm sure there are many, and I would imagine that they are karmic in many cases. But whatever the cause, those of the positive polarity ought to work to help alleviate this sort of suffering, and all suffering for that matter, and transform this planet into a place where those sorts of things happen less and less, because with sufficient conscious awareness in the collective, there's no need for those sorts of things to happen. Those things are a symptom of the madness of this planet and the confusion and the ignorance. And how does the Law of One come into play on this question? This philosophy is a teaching that, in my opinion, is not so much directed at outer phenomena and social activity, though Don and other questioners over the years asking that conscious channeling have asked plenty about events within the world. But at heart, I think this philosophy is directed more towards the cause of all suffering and its roots within individual consciousness. So using this philosophy, when I personally see these sorts of horrors, of which there are countless daily examples in this world, my response, among other things, is to redouble my own efforts to be a better person. I really believe in Gandhi's maxim, to quote, that you see on bumper stickers not infrequently, to quote, be the change you wish to see in the world. And to understand that quote, I conceive of the situation like this. Imagine that everyone on earth is swimming in the same pool, the same ocean of water. And through millennia of what Rod would call bellicosity, warfare, self-created suffering, hurting other people, confusion, etc., that ocean, you could say, is polluted. Polluted on the relative level. Ultimately, it's whole, complete, and perfect. But from our perspective, from our incarnational standpoint, that water is polluted with division and unconsciousness. So in doing work, in clearing your own energy and opening your own heart and balancing yourself and dissolving the separate identity and above all else, seeking the creator that you are, these are ways to clean up. You might conceive of it as your own area of water, your own part in the pool. You powerfully so. The more you do this work, the more that others do the same work, the cleaner and clearer that water is for everyone swimming in the pool, you might say. It's like we all become filters, and we filter out the gunk of the pool or the ocean of this planet. And then, consequently, the more that each who swims in this water can see more clearly who they are, that they are a being of love, and can see what this experience actually is, because there's less, the illusion, you might say, is less thick. And then increasing the likelihood that each person swimming in these waters will seek healing and love and truth and won't commit these sort of horrible things. So how do you bring peace to the world? How do you respond to these sorts of situations and help make the world a better place? By being at peace yourself. How do you dissolve unconsciousness in the world? By dissolving unconsciousness in yourself. React with negativity to the negative events of the world, if you will. That is normal and understandable and something that all of us on the phone right now have in common. But to change the entire system as directly as possible is to find out who you really are and to be who you really are and to radiate who you really are. Because who you really are is a being of infinite peace and love and light. And you can understand this by seeing that the system, the matrix, the third density illusion, the planet, and everybody on it is not outside of yourself. It's outside of the incarnate self, who most of us believe ourselves to be, but spirituality is a search for who you really are, the one creator. So that these horrendous things that happen inside of you, the deepest you, all things being one. So I would end my response to the question by pointing to what Ra describes as balance, as ideal balance and perfect balance. Ra says in session 42 that even when being attacked, a perfectly balanced entity will feel love in response. And then they go on to say, quote, balance is not indifference, but rather the observer not blinded by any feelings of separation, but rather fully imbued with love. So that sets an ideal. It sets a trajectory of possibility, asserting that it is eminently possible to respond to these sorts of situations with love, not necessarily condoning the behavior, but loving everybody involved, loving the situation as it is.
Yeah, I've got some points that piggyback pretty nicely off of Gary's excellent response there. I would reiterate that the realization of such a strong and ethical backbone that Storm Shadow is highlighting in himself is a healthy one, and that it's a logical step to true self-awareness. And we, as third density positive entities, have a somewhat difficult task in realizing what we feel is proper behavior for a human and accepting all those who don't behave like this. In order for us to polarize, we have to have some sort of ethics and idea of what is right or wrong, which means if we see somebody acting in a way that we would say is wrong, it's a step of coming to realize how to not judge that as being a fundamental wrongness. And so I would relate this to one of my favorite areas of study, which is Jungian psychology, and say that what Storm Shadow is observing here is a very clear realization of his shadow and also what would be a cultural shadow, because our culture in general views this as something that is unacceptable. Jung defines the shadow as the person that we'd rather not be. You could say it's just a recognition of what we find unacceptable. And this realization to make clear what we find unacceptable is a step towards ultimate acceptance of all as the creator. I would bring in at this point, suggest to Storm Shadow to listen to Ra's words in session 10 when Don asks, what are some of the practices or exercises to perform to produce an acceleration towards the Law of One? And sort of paraphrase, Ra says, the most nearly centered and usable within your illusion complex, the moment contains love. That is the lesson or goal of this illusion or density. The conscious statement of self to self of the desire to seek love is so central an act that, as before, the loss of power due to friction of impurity is inconsequential. So the first thing I would say is to simply state that here is something I see that I find unacceptable. I want to see the Creator in it, and I am seeking love in this moment where I do not feel love. So you're realizing, taking a step, this next step, in saying that you want to realize everything as the Creator. You want to realize that what you believe you are not is still an acceptable thing that can be loved. Another way to look at that is to say that you are I am. Whatever you add on to I am is how you identify, but whatever you say I am not is your shadow. But there's another person within the human spectrum of behavior that says I am that. I am the person that kidnaps children and sells them to sex slavery. So there is still the potential within the I am that everybody is. Everybody contains the same I am. That I am is the same creator within everybody, which has been realized by mystics and even psychologists. Carl Rogers, Alan Watts, Ramana Maharshi all say that within each person is the same fundamental self, the I am, that can view any other I am as the same I am that they are. And so even if you say I am not a kidnapper, you can say it is a possibility within the human spectrum. It is the same creator as I am. And once you access that level of I am-ness that realizes the unity between your I am and their I am, you can realize the love in the moment, which I think it's all part of a process. And I think feeling that emotional charge, the complete and utter disgust that causes Storm Shadow to go into the planet-eating mode, where he feels like he feels horror that men like this are allowed to draw air on the same planet that good men live on. That is perfectly normal and healthy and a proper step, and it just takes more concentration and another step towards seeking love in the moment, meditation, contemplation, and just seeking this creator inside of us that accepts all things can help. And I think that once you do that, it doesn't mean that you are tacitly accepting what is going on. Like we talked about last week with Martin Luther King, or even Gandhi, they weren't necessarily antagonistic to the people they were, or to the systems they were trying to change. They were individual to it. Martin Luther King stressed loving your enemies. Instead of being antagonistic to enemies, you find the love in all things, but you still march for what you believe strongly in. And if you believe that is relieving the suffering that we observe on earth, then that is what you march for, but you don't do it in an antagonistic way. And I think that's about all I could really say on that.
Mickey, you got anything to say?
Well, there are all kinds of things on the planet that we can get involved in. There's lots of injustices to be rectified and things to be done. I'd recommend to people that they follow their passion there and do what they feel the most compelled to do, and if possible, to do it, as Austin just said, to do it with love. I think the law of one has been stated by Aleister Crowley as the whole of the law is do what thou wilt, and I think it has been modified, do what thou wilt under love is the whole of the law. So follow your passion and do what you feel is appropriate and try to do it with love, and realize that you're dealing with the Creator, with every person, both the perpetrators and the victims. And you know, that's the best we can do. I think all of our lives are dedicated to, in some fashion, serving other people. And maybe this is rectifying wrongs or feeding people or healing people or housing people or clothing people or giving people political clout. There are just all kinds of things to do. So I think we, in the deepest part of our hearts and souls, we support everyone with our thoughts and with our best wishes. And maybe we support people also with some money, or maybe we go to a meeting, or maybe we become more active and campaign. You just follow your passion and do what it says to do.
I think that that is so true, Mickey. And what everybody has had to say is brings out different elements of it that are absolutely true. I think the heart of what we're talking about here is karma. And in session 34, Ra defines karma as inertia, and says that the stoppage of the inertia of action may be called forgiveness. So here's what I basically think. Look at Ra at session 18, part of the answer to question 12. Forgiveness of other self is forgiveness of self. An understanding of this insists upon full forgiveness upon the conscious level of self and other self, for they are one. A full forgiveness is thus impossible without the inclusion of self. Now, how in the world can you say that you are that person who is perfectly willing to see a baby or a young child as an article to be sold and when, you know, you're looking to fulfill what somebody will pay, and you're looking for exactly what that person wants, and so you steal or kidnap the baby or the young child that is going to raise the biggest price for you and fill your pockets. Where am I in this incredibly twisted way of thinking about people? Well, I'm in there. I am that person who is capable of seeing people as units to be used, to be sold, to be what is it, Mickey? The in wartime, there's a
collateral damage.
No, collateral damage is good, but I'm thinking of what they call soldiers. They don't call them soldiers. They
cannon
call them
fodder.
Uh-huh, cannon fodder or something-something units.
Expendable biological units.
Something like that, yeah. They don't think of the soldiers as people. They think of them as units that they can put on the field and put into play in order to win a battle. And it's hard for a master sergeant to think this way because he is in direct contact with his unit. It gets a little bit easier for each rank as it goes up, lieutenants and then captains and then majors. By the time you hit general, you are not dealing with people. You are dealing with groups of people that you are able to put on the field of battle at a certain point to do a certain job. Do we have enough people that can fire this particular kind of weapon or cannon or whatever we're trying to do that we can use? Let's put them there. Expendable biological units, something like that. Anyway, it's very easy by the time you get to be a general to be very blunt and cold about what's necessary to win a battle. And if somebody says, well, you know, that's going to cost a lot of lives, and the general says, yes, but that's what it takes to win this battle. If we don't win this battle, we are that far further behind, and evil is obviously the other side, the foe, the enemy is always evil, and we are good, right? So the evil guys are going to gain, and that's unacceptable. So we're going to have, as Jim said, the damage of some lives, some young, beautiful, clean, fresh, right out of high school, hoping to better themselves by joining the Army, or when I was a kid, being drafted. you didn't have a choice. your number came up and you're in the Army now. But as you get higher up in any large group, whether it is a corporation or part of the nation for which you're responsible as a senator or a representative or in the military, you are not dealing with people. You are dealing with groups and what you can do with these groups to win prestige, power, success, and along whatever lines you want to define it. And you don't think of the people anymore. You're thinking of policies. You're thinking of winning. And when you win, you are considered a hero. People don't look very closely at those who are dead on the battlefield in the course of the war. All you have to do is look at the war between the states. In the South, they call it the War of Northern Aggression. We call it the Civil War. At any rate, an enormous number of young men died for what they believed in, ways of life that they believed in to the point of leaving home and family and throwing themselves in front of horrible bullets, horrible shrapnel and cannon fodder. And many, so many died. So many died. And it was a horrible thing to contemplate then and now. And it is hidden in history. And people like General Grant and General Lee are given, you know, tremendous honor because of what they did with the resources that they had. And the South almost won. It was very close, very, very close indeed. And what would have happened if the South had won? There would have been a continuation of legal slavery. I have to say that even with the North winning, there has been a tremendous amount of resistance all over our nation to any real equality between the races. There is always somehow a tendency to want to be better than. And so one way or another, we are able, because of the color of a person's skin, because of his political affiliation, because of fill in the blank, to think of people as less than people, to think of people as units that might be useful, pawns to put on the playing board. And you know, in any football game, there are enough men on each side that the details of offense and defense are, and you know, you look at all the X's and the arrows and the circles about people explaining why this worked the way it worked, and that's just 11 people on a side. The main problem that takes power away from us is that we're only one small little unit. We don't have a group. We have not given up our ideals to become a general or a president of a company or of a nation or whatever. So that we can make a difference in an outer sense. I remember Mitch McConnell. I went to college with Mitch, and we did Barry Goldwater was running for president that year, and we did a fake. What do you call it when everybody gets together and votes in somebody? Anyway, when a group gets together and selects the person that's going to run for president, we did one of those. And I discovered that Barry Goldwater won, and won because Mitch lied. And I went to him and I said, "Mitch, you lied here. Isn't that not good?" He says, "No. First thing you got to learn if you're going to go into politics is to be able to lie." He says, "That's a very important tool for a politician." Oh, good. I thought, I'm not going to be able to be a politician. I can't lie. My face just tells the truth. No way. Bye-bye. So, yeah, you know, I had to throw away my my ambition to join statesmanship. That was what I was taking, and I was going to be part of that. That was my ambition at that point in my life. And I tossed that away and became an English major. On the other side, you have the Hawaiian Ho'oponopono, I believe it's called. And this is, isn't it kahuna that is the Hawaiian religion? At any rate, if I've got the word wrong, I apologize. But one of the practices of this religion is that the way you heal somebody that's sick is to sit in the office and read his chart, find out why he's sick, you know, what he's sick with, and everything about him that you can find out. And then you go within yourself and you find that part of yourself that is identifiable with that illness in that other person. If that person sold people to slavery and was able to do that, you find that within yourself. You find whatever within yourself is wrong with the other person. And then you work to heal yourself, my forgiveness. And you find it, forgive it, redeem it. And this is all working within yourself. And statistics have shown that when hospitals have allowed this practice to be part of their staff, that dysfunctional people become able to function, that people who touch with reality become able to be in touch with reality, and so forth. One person after another becomes more conscious and more full of wellness because you have healed that illness in yourself. That is the practice, and it works. I don't have any idea how you get to the point where you can be so incredibly humble and able to see the darkness in others within yourself, to find it and to forgive it, that you are able to offer this practice. I have no idea how you get there from here. But I do know that forgiveness is the brake that stops the wheel of karma. So when you are looking at this situation, you don't simply toss it away because you can't do anything about it. You're just going to live a good life and let that be your service. In a way, that's absolutely true, but there's more to it. If you see it, then it's time to work on it within yourself, to find that shadow, that part of your shadow self, to find it, to forgive it, to redeem it by asking it to work in you for the light. I have tried with outer success, let's say. Jim, wouldn't you say that a good example of my outer success would be the bad landlord, Luther?
Oh, yeah. That was a very good good example.
Where I knew that since Don and Jim and I were standing so very close to the light, I had to stay in unity with this landlord, and this landlord was raping Don, trying to get money from him for nothing. And he actually managed to do that, because the only way that I could stay in unity with this guy was to give him the money. Did it burn my soul to do that? Oh, yes. But it was absolutely necessary that I stay in unity with him, because the stakes were so very high. We knew that we were standing close to the light, and we knew that we were drawing the attention of, shall we say, the loyal opposition. And we knew that any way that we separated from any soul on the planet was going possibly to cost us the raw transmissions. We would not be able to hold that very narrow band energy. It was absolutely necessary that I remain one with bad landlord Luther. And where I criticize myself is that I was never able to let the forgiveness go all the way. I always regretted the money that Don had to spend, because there was no way to deal with this person except to give him the money. So, yes, I succeeded, and the contact went on, but in the deepest sense, there were ways in which I reserved the right to judge. And any judgment whatsoever is not forgiveness. So it's just, we have to work on forgiveness so much, all the time, in every situation. And I encourage you, Storm Shadow, to try that as much as you can. We're running out of time. I'm going to turn this over to Gary.
Thank you, Carla. Thank you, Austin. Thank you, Jim. And thank you, Storm Shadow, for submitting that question. You've been listening to LL Researchers in the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our website, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and especially to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LL Research. Have a wonderful week, everybody. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then.
We love you all.